I so appreciated Lou. His opening and the context of it, and I almost thought maybe he had been peering into my notes here. And so this morning we want to conclude what we've been talking about in 1 Peter, and this will be our fifth or sixth or final one. And I want to remind us that we're talking about the essential message of Peter, and this morning we're going to talk about what Lou kind of touched upon, and that is what is required. Somebody spell courage. I always go blank.
You're doing good.
A-G-A-U-R.
One person at a time.
C-O-U-R.
A-G-E. Okay.
Got it. There you go.
That was melodramatic, wasn't it? Trying to make a point tonight. We're going to talk about courage, because the last thing in Peter is the grace for courage. Now, can we think of anyone else in the Bible, in the New Testament, who learned what it was to lack courage than Peter? Peter had a great breakdown, didn't he? He lost his courage, didn't he? He said he would never do it. So this man, above all else, is qualified to talk to us about courage, spiritual courage, where it comes from, how we get it, how the Lord imparts it to us. We talked last time about character. And I was amazed to find out, as I was looking for some poignant quote about courage, I didn't find any that met my fancy. But last time we talked about character, the grace that is needed to bring character into our life, the character according to Christ. How many men, even Voltaire, even Mark Twain, who were two vile unbelievers, said a lot and respected men and women of character. They would much rather be around someone of character. Courage is an equal to character. And of course, many of us, I know, say, wait a minute, that's not me. I know my weakness. I know my fears. I don't know where to muscle. And so the Lord's going to help us through Peter, who himself, as I said, had an incredible breakdown, didn't he, in his courage. Lou mentioned a couple of things about Paine in his writing. He referred to summer soldiers. I remember that quote so well. Why a summer soldier? Only when the weather's good. A fair weather soldier. Now we know some of the greatest paintings that were done during the Revolutionary War pictured what?
Bad weather.
Huh?
Bad weather.
Bad weather. The sacrifice of Washington and his army. You know, one of the biggest mistakes the U.S. military made during the Civil War is they hunkered in the winter. They wouldn't fight. For every man shot with a mini ball in a phalanx line, or shrapnel from a Parrot gun, four died as a result of hunkering in the winter. No, they died of dysentery. Four. Hunkering is not the way to fight. We cannot be summer soldiers for Christ. We have to be willing to fight under the most difficult circumstances. And where do we get the strength? Where do we get the help from the Lord? Where do we get the courage? So let's look at a few things, because when we talk about courage, this is a familiar word to us, isn't it, in the Bible? So let's go to the earliest part. Let's go to Numbers chapter 13, the exhortation of Moses. Numbers chapter 13, verse 17. Moses is speaking to the spies. He's encouraging them. And this is a very instructive few verses here that behind it is very instructive about our lives and about what the Lord is doing in our life right now. Right now. And how he wants us to look at as we march on. Then Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said, go up to this land, go up this way into the south, go up to the mountains and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, whether there are forests or not, be of good cheer or be of good courage. Now, in the New Testament, Jesus said, be of good cheer. What's the word in the Greek? I challenge you to go look it up.
Courage.
It's courage.
Yeah.
It's courage. The Lord said, be of good cheer. In other words, be courageous. So it's found just equally in the New Testament by the Lord himself. Be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes. Now the most significant thing, I made a very challenging statement here, is that this land, when you go up, and I love this verse, whether the land is rich or whether it's poor, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. What's your life like right now? Is it rich or is it poor? We all go through seasons of richness and poorness. Is the Lord in my life, whether it's good or bad? Do I determine whether the Lord is with me based upon because things are going easily? This is very telling. This requires us to be brave. Because we're going to look at our life, and these spies made a big, we know what the outcome was, big mistake. Oh, we can't. We're like grasshoppers. And what did, you remember what Caleb said?
Oh, but we can.
They shall be food for us. He was looking at this not as whether, as Jonathan said, for the Lord to save by what?
By many or by few.
Is nothing. It means nothing. Ernie, you got to give some other people a chance. It's not fair, Ernie.
But he's quick.
Yeah, he is. So this is critical for us, brothers and sisters. And you look at the list, strong or weak. Which am I today? Am I strong or am I weak? Lately felt a little weak. But am I strong? Sometimes our strength is what? It's our worst enemy. We don't depend on the Lord anymore. We forget the Lord. We're strong. In this sense, I'm glad I'm getting older. I'm being forced in a way that I've never been forced to trust the Lord. I'm grateful. I hope I can be as grateful as time goes on. So Peter, let's look at another verse. John, let's look at Numbers 31. Let's read a few more verses and then we'll carry on. Numbers chapter 31, and we're going to look at two verses, 7 and 8. And you know, it's amazing. I read my notes. I really do. I'm sorry. It's Deuteronomy chapter 31. And then, if you're all there, Deuteronomy 31, verse 7 and 8. Then Moses called Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and of good courage, for you must go with this people to the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall cause them to inherit it. I think Joshua was he was a man who needed constant encouragement. He was told numerous times on numerous occasions to be strong, be courageous. And so I have to think that he was a man who tended to back off a little bit, even though he showed tremendous bravery. Yet I think we see behind the words a personality that was a tendency toward being fearful. And so we see it over and over again. Let's now look in John chapter 16. John chapter 16 and verse 33. Very familiar verse to us. These things, John 16, 33, these things I have spoken to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. Be of strong courage. The word is, in the Greek, is the word courage. I have overcome the world. I have overcome. There lies in part my secret. He's overcome. I'm not the overcomer. He's the overcomer. And I'm in him. And he's in me. Though I may feel weak, as this is why it was so important for Moses to tell these spies, tell me if it's rich or poor. It's irrelevant. The Lord is with me. The Lord is with you. He said he would give you the land. He's not giving it to you because you're more pretty or more smart or more anything. Only that he has cast his love upon you. And let's continue here, or go back. Luke 22, and we'll look now at the couple of stories here related to Peter. Luke chapter 22. And we're looking now at the story of Peter and his breakdown. Having arrested him, that is Jesus, they led him and brought him into the high priest's house. But Peter followed at a distance. Isn't that a picture for us? He followed at a distance. He was frightened. I'm sorry, verse 54. Chapter 22, verse 54. Peter followed at a distance. He was fearful, wasn't he? And then verse 60. We don't want to read the whole thing. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And then Peter remembered. This was after he had denied the Lord. He said, I didn't know. I don't know him. I don't know who he is. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter, and then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. So Peter went out, and he wept bitterly. He experienced his own cowardice, didn't he? I do have a quote here. I don't know where it came from, but maybe I could even put my name by it. None knows his need for courage more than him who has come face to face with his own cowardice. No one knows. Sometimes it takes utter denial, if you will, for us to realize what a coward we really are and how much we need the Lord. So none knows his need for courage more than him who has come face to face with his own cowardice. Such was Peter. He could speak in this book with great experience, his own deep experience. And again, we all know it well. Let's look now at our verse in 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5, this will Each chapter is wonderful. Each chapter in Peter talks about grace. It defines a particular way, character, conduct, our confidence. And now we're looking at courage. Verse 10 of chapter 5, "But may the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered a while, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you." Very familiar verses to us, isn't it? But these things require a kind of bravery that we do not have, a kind of courage that we do not have naturally. We need something from the Lord to instill a kind of bravery for him. And what's our bravery for? Why is it? It's for us to be a witness. Yesterday, I have to thank the whole fellowship, all the sisters particularly, and the brothers. My family was so touched, my in-laws. There was an atmosphere of Christ. I mean, this fellowship has a testimony, a lampstand. And yesterday, that lampstand was a witness to a lot of unsaved people. I had one of the guys who works in the woodworking group. There were like 20 woodworkers that were here that my brother-in-law was part of. And he came up to me afterwards. He said, I really enjoyed this a lot. And I didn't know if he was a Christian. Turned out he was a real Christian. He said, "I'm just really glad, though, that we didn't do something." And I said, "Like what?" He said, "If we had sung 'Just As I Am,'" he said, "I don't think I could have stood it. I would have broke down crying. Just as I am, without one plea, only that thy blood was shed for me." He said, "I can't sing that song because I am that song." Well, y'all were just, y'all did it yourselves yesterday. And my family is so touched, and my father-in-law wouldn't leave. He was the last one out of here. He's normally the last guy out, or first guy out. He was literally the last guy out yesterday. He was so blessed. He didn't even know what it was. Really, not really. You're around spiritual people in the life of Christ, and you just get carried. Even the world gets carried away by it. So thank you very much. But why courage to be a witness? To be a witness to Christ, to the resurrection power of Christ in my life, in your life. That's what Peter was talking about here. I mentioned that men like Mark Twain and Voltaire sing the praises of brave men, courageous men. It's a mystery to them. People of courage are equally valued as people with a character. Now, what color have we attributed to someone who isn't courageous?
Yellow.
That's right. I wanted to tell you a little story. This is the, I always use military, I can't help it. This is the first cav, as it's called, which is part of the 7th Cavalry. Who was famous for the 7th Cavalry? General Custer. They died with their boots on. You ever seen that movie?
Yeah.
Okay. I knew John would. But you know, bravery, courage. It's funny because, and this is not, I hope, is there anybody that's a 7th Cav veteran? I hope not. I don't want to offend them. But my dad told me a story. When he was in Korea, he was in the 45th Regiment. And they were in reserve. Now, life's pretty good in the reserve because you're in the rear. You get to drink beer, he said. He said, you get to drink beer and you don't have to worry about mortar shells coming down on you. Well, the 7th Cav, which later became part of it, was the 1st Cav, got run out of North Korea horrifically. They were running for their lives. It was one of the few times, it was, I believe, the worst defeat in American history, next to maybe Bull Run in the Civil War. And they were running for their lives. They abandoned their weapons, everything. And when the communists came up to their artillery positions, they turned the howitzer 105s on the retreating 1st Cav, or the 7th Cav. And then they brought up the 45th to guard their rear as they were retreating. And well, my dad was one of those guys drinking beer, and they said, get to the front. And they were getting bombed with all of their own shells. My dad, to the day of his death, said about this insignia. He said it was the horse they never rode. It was the line they never crossed. And the color, it speaks for itself. He considered them yellow. Now, of course, this is a very distinguished unit in the U.S. military. It was a single event. But he was very upset because he felt that they lacked the courage that was necessary. And it led to the death of a lot of men, and things happened in war. But, brothers and sisters, the Lord has called us to be courageous. He will give us grace, as Peter found out. Peter was a man who was himself overcome by his own fears. Even when he was in the boat, remember the Lord, he saw him and the Lord said, or Peter challenged the Lord. He said, Lord, if it's you, bid me to come out. And the Lord said, come out. And he came out. Of course, we know he looked around and sunk. He lost his courage. He lost his bravery. Now, let's look now at a few things here in 1 Peter that I think will help us with this matter of our courage. That all grace, may the God of all grace, who called us to eternal glory, after you've suffered a while, perfect you, establish, and strengthen you. First, he says in verse 1, he says, the elders who are among you I exhort, I who am an elder also. Now, there are three things about elders that I think we should take note of here. First, their relationship with the Lord, a fellow elder, relationship with one another. And elders here, we don't have elders per se in this meeting or designated elders, but we have elders. We have elderesses. I'm always trying to be politically correct. I got an email. I better not say that. I got two emails in the middle of the night last night. Actually, two texts, and they were so encouraging. One of them kind of let me know that I needed to not to say it the way it is. I thought I did, but this thing about elders, the elders, Peter is talking about elders, and these elders are not because they are the big shots among God's people. These are the people who serve. These are the people who make themselves available. Peter refers to himself here as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Peter here is saying that he is a witness. Are we a witness to the sufferings of Christ? What does that mean? I don't think the Lord today is in greater suffering, if you will, in the persecution and the denigration of the name of Jesus Christ than we see today. The vitriol toward Christianity is unprecedented in the last at least 75 years in American history. An utter hatred for Christians. I think I've said it previously that there's two things in this country that are politically correct to do, which is to badmouth smokers and to badmouth Christians. You can say anything you want about Christians and about smokers. Smokers are banished to the road in sub-zero weather to have their cigarettes. because after all, it's tobacco. My sister went to Washington, D.C. and sent me an email on Monday. She asked me what she should go and see first, and I said, well, you need to go to Arlington, but that's not in D.C. So she went to Arlington, and she said, gosh, that I didn't know about the unknown soldier. And we got to talking about the various symbols, because she is a history major. She's a degreed historian. And I said, well, you know, Mom wouldn't be too happy with the fact that all the columns in the Capitol and at the Supreme Court and at the Lincoln Memorial, the tops of the columns are all carved, and guess which leaf it is? Tobacco and corn.
Yep.
Why? Because it was the cash crop.
Yep.
Made the country rich. It made the country great. You can't go around knocking off those tobacco leaves there, right? But he says here that we are to be witnesses of the sufferings. The Lord Jesus is his name is being dragged through the streets. Christians are being called all kinds of names. And in order for us to be a testimony, we need courage from the Lord to stand up against it. Or to stand, not against it, but to stand in spite of it. We're not getting into just arguments with people. We want to stand in life. There were people at that memorial yesterday who are cynical, who despise Christianity. Yesterday, I don't think a one of them could leave and not say, well, there's something real there. Not a one of them. So he tells them to shepherd the flock of God, which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly. In other words, not as a profession. To be compelled, it's your responsibility, but willingly. There's a lot of shepherds in this meeting. I appreciate them, all of them, so much. We need to do a little more of it. Sometimes I think we're a little pensive about shepherding one another, shepherding a bad situation, because we don't want to meddle in other people's affairs. I am especially feel sensitive about that, at least I feel I do. But sometimes we need to step in. Maybe if I had maybe stepped in, perhaps, with my brother-in-law, maybe things might have turned out a little better. I don't know. I would say at this point it's the Lord's will what has happened. But we need to shepherd who the Lord has put over us or who we have been put over. And this means being put over is not something official. It means a care, a love for each other, looking after one another, doing more visitation, seeing to the care of one another, a phone call, a meal, an email. Peter here is saying, do it willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly. How much dishonest gain in Christianity have we been a witness to? If we've been a Christian for more than 25 years, how much of this have we been a witness to? Oh my gosh, it's so disheartening.
Yeah.
Dishonest gain. I was talking to a brother the other day who is... they're in the middle of a new work and they're preaching the gospel on the streets. And the question of putting a box or doing a collection in the meeting came up. Should they pass the plate? And he actually was inclined not to do it. He said, I think people have seen enough of this. And besides, a lot of these folks can't afford it anyway. And I said, good, I'll be praying for you. There may be a time for that. But people in this world, especially good people, are fed up with the church's manipulation on this level. They're fed up. They see through it. Big edifice. My brother-in-law, Pat O'Donohue, he actually, for those who met him, he's actually a retired colonel in the Marine Corps, 29 years. Hoo-wah. I mean, he is, it's funny, he and I were exchanging emails, and everything was, Pat, I think maybe we do this, and are you okay with that? And he'd answer every email was, Roger that. In one email, he said, Roger that, and we'll look to the Almighty. But he knows the Lord. He could barely, I was sitting close to him, he could barely hold it together when he talked about eternity. That the day is coming when we will eternally be with the Lord. But not the dishonest gain is just, but rather eagerly doing something. The number of brothers and sisters who eagerly participated and helped with my family is just, I'm overwhelmed by it. Thank you so much. Not as being lords over those entrusted to you. Isn't that a sweet thing to say? Entrusted. I cannot tell you how many times before we got our own children, I counted it. I think if the number of young couples who were having children who came to Debbie and I and said, we want you, if something happens to us, we want you to take our kids. Do you know how big my family would have been if the Lord had taken all of them? I counted it. It was like 15 kids. I mean, I guess I didn't take it as seriously as I should have, because I would have said, wait, no, I can't, because that would really be over the top. I have no idea how I'd support everybody. But to be entrusted with someone's children was a great honor. Listen, we are entrusted with one another. The care and the love and the devotion to one another. All of this is connected to courage, brothers and sisters. What Peter is talking about, where the courage that we get, really, for this world, begins in our relationships with one another in the church. Nor is being lords over those who we are entrusted with, being examples to the flock, lording over. I know, because of my personality, I know sometimes I lord it over things. I'm sorry. You can let yourself get away with things, or you go overboard. We're not called upon to lord it over anything. We're called upon, rather, as Peter says here, to be an example to the flock. Peter's learned so much, because Peter was a guy that lorded over things. He's learned. He's grown up. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. This is what service is. We will receive, for those of us who serve in sincerity, a crown that does not fade away. Everything in life fades away. Everything. If we are serving from our hearts, the Lord's people, we receive a crown that does not fade away. Then he talks to the younger, and I appeal to the younger among us. Us older ones tend to kind of run things. How we need the younger brothers and sisters. Their love for the Lord, their different perspective with their generation, we need it. God is faithful to how many generations?
All generations.
All generations. One generation passes and another one is coming up. It's a cycle. We appreciate them. I appreciate you. I'm all thumbs at times. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say because I'm not a cool guy. But I love the young. I could just squeeze the life out of Joey. I love him. I don't know what else to do or say. Peter is grown to take a concern for young people. Only arrogant people don't care about young people. Only arrogant, self-absorbed people don't care about the young, who struggle with growing up, finding their place, finding who they are, no longer their parents or dependent upon their parents. They don't want to be like their parents. Peter's done a lot of growing up here. But he says, likewise, you younger, submit yourselves to the elders. Now you're encouraged to submit yourselves. Why? It's a protection. Elders know, older folks know a little better. You will find that many times the very people who you submit to can be the most humble, gracious elder that you'll ever want to meet. They only want to help. They want to protect you. They want to help guide you. But then he doesn't stop. Peter, in the same breath, says, yes, all of you be submissive to one another. So this submission is not merely the younger being submissive to the older, but all of you be submissive to one another. Yield to one another. Cooperate with one another. There's a sweet fragrance of the Lord when we cooperate with one another. It is so hard, naturally, for us to cooperate with other people because our ways, we know, is the best way. Be clothed with humility. Now, we all know Peter had a history of being humble, didn't he? He lacked humility. Yet here, he's learned how imperative humility is. And then he quotes from Proverbs, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. God resists us when we are proud. Sometimes we have to learn that the hard way. Our pride and our self-assurance, if our courage is based upon that, you don't have real courage when the battle comes. I will be a summertime soldier. Therefore, he says, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Is that not sheer poetry? Does that not give rest to your soul? Just reading those words. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. There is nothing, whether the land is wealthy or poor, with you and I as Christians, everything in our life, as we sit here right now, everything has been ordained of God. That's how I see it. He's called me exactly where I'm at right now. Do I have the courage to accept that? Can I rest, humble myself under his mighty hand? Or do I resist? Like I said, one thing about old age, it does get you to where you kind of calm down a little bit. You back off. You say, no, I tried that same reaction about 3,481 times and it didn't work. I got the same result. Which, by the way, is the definition of what? Insanity. You do the same thing over and over thinking you're going to get a different result. He says, be sober. Well, let's look. Casting your care upon him, for he cares for you. I think that Peter is musing back to the Lord saying, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. These words did not mean what the Lord intended them to mean for Peter until Peter had fallen. Many of us, this is how the Lord has dealt with us. He's allowed us to fall, to be humbled. And again, I would say cautiously, I'm glad he did it for me. I'm glad he's doing it for me. I look forward to it. Because whether the land is rich or whether it is poor, I belong to him. And he will fulfill that thing which he has for me in the end. He is a faithful God. He is our God. Be sober. Be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. 2 weeks ago, when I got word about my brother-in-law passing and the circumstances behind his passing, I realized for a moment that we are in a violent battle where it's a matter of life and death. It's not a game. Being sober, being serious-minded is what it means. That's what sober means, being serious-minded. Doesn't mean we walk around with a sour look on our face, but things are serious. We have circumstances in our life right now that the enemy is trying to take an advantage. We may not see it yet. We don't know exactly what he's forming against us. But make no mistake about it, he wants to kill every one of us if he could. Mm-hmm. And anything in between. Confusion, doubt, breakdown of our faith. He's a roaring lion. We're in a very serious fight. This will change the way we pray. It will change the way we look at other brothers and sisters about circumstances around us. If we see that this is a real fight. Resist him. You know, it's interesting that that is the only thing that we are, that seems to be our part in all of this, is our resisting him. To resist the devil, and he will what? Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. What a formula. What a formula that we have. And I have to admit, I just don't remember it like I should. I forget. I retreat to my own abilities, my own whatever, and I forget. Be steadfast in the faith. We are called, we are children of faith. We are children of Abraham. We're called upon to be steadfast in our faith. Now, I have found that relying on other people's faith is a big help, other brothers and sisters. And I know that they, vice versa, they do the same. We depend on one another, encouraging one another. knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the whole world. In other words, this is not unusual. If we're a living Christian in touch with the Lord, in touch with heavenly things, we're in a battle. Sometimes it's very fierce. Sometimes it's not so fierce, but we're in a battle. And it's common to all believers. It is not the proof of whether God has blessed me if I don't have any problems. In fact, I'm a little concerned if I have no problems at all, if you follow me. And then Peter goes on here and says here our verse, our text, but may the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory in Christ, he's called us. Now, if he's called us, is there any doubt? Should there be any doubt that he won't get us there? There shouldn't be. He will. After you have suffered a while, perfect you, establish, strengthen, and settle you. To him be glory and the dominion forever and ever. After we've suffered a while. Gosh, I don't like that part. I like the glory part. I don't like the suffer part. I mean, the glory part, wow. But the suffer part. As I said earlier, whoever said this, that no one knows their need more for courage than him who has been face to face with his own cowardice. That's where real courage, when you realize you don't have it. He who lives in me has it. Christ in me, the hope of glory. I think all of these things came to Peter later. They were interpreted through the crucible of his own life and his own failings. He grew to understand how real character was built, how real overcoming came, how real courage came. And it came because he looked back on his own failings and said, Lord, I can't do it on my own. You in me has to do it. So may the Lord help us to be brave, to be strong, and of a good courage. How many times the Lord has said with those same words, I am with you. I'm with you. Doesn't matter if the land is rich or whether it's poor. I'm glad he blessed them, right? I mean, it's wonderful. The land became a great provider for them. What happened, though, when the Lord gave them too much? What happened to them spiritually?
They turned.
Sure, they turned. Are we any different? Sometimes I think the Lord intentionally has to leave us in a place where we rely upon him. We can be embittered by it. And all of us have been. Why is this happening? This is not fair. It's not right. Or we can turn to him and say, Lord, have your way. Give me grace to follow you. Give me courage to follow you. So may the Lord help us. Let's sing just verse 2 of 295.